microbots, superhero origins, and grief recovery? This is my listener choice review for 2014's Big Hero 6. Big Hero 6 was released in 2014. It was directed by Don Hall and Chris Williams, with a screenplay by Jordan Roberts, Robert L. Baird, and Don Gearson. It's based on Big Hero 6 by Man of Action, technically a Marvel comic book. It stars Scott Adisett, Ryan Porter, Daniel Henney, T.J. Miller, Jamie Chung, Damon Wayans Jr., Genesis Rodriguez, James Cromwell, Maya Rudolph, and Alan Tudyk. It was produced by the Walt Disney Pictures and Walt Disney Animation Studios and distributed by Walt Disney Studios Motion Pictures. It was released November 7th, 2014, with a running time of 102 minutes on a budget of $165 million. What do you think it made at the worldwide box office, Pat? It made $657.8 million at the worldwide box office. That's right, Pat. So this came in from a binge lord out there who put in a request. Hey, since we're all in quarantine, would you please talk about this movie? What do you think about it? If you're a listener or a binge lord out there and you would like us to review a movie or me to review a movie, talk about a movie, do a quick little mini feature presentation review on it, we are taking submissions. Go ahead and hit us up on Twitter at Pat and Jason or bingemovies@gmail.com and we will take your recommendation and we will review it. If you're another podcaster out there, you listen to the show and you would like us to talk about a certain movie, we'll do a little mini feature presentation review on it. And by we, I mean me, because Pat is MIA, all right? I don't know what they're doing to him. The dark movie overlords of the not Walt Disney Corporation are doing some microbot experimentation, let's just put it like that, on different places within Pat's body. And it might be a long time before we see our old buddy Pat again. In the meantime, here I am, still in the bunker, talking about cartoons. I'm not going to do a one-sentence plot synopsis on this thing because, you know, it's not just not the same without Pat. Sometimes some things you just need a partner for, you know? I remember watching this. I watched it on home video, probably Redboxed it or something. Enjoyed it. I thought it was a cute little film and didn't really give it much more thought than that. And then I was asked to review it by a binge lord, and I recently just rewatched it. And I think the thing that sticks out the most to me is, one, the animation style. This is a Walt Disney release. This isn't a Pixar release, but it could have been Pixar by the quality of it. It is simultaneously very cartoonish in its presentation, which is a very adequate adjective to describe a cartoon. See how profound I am. Very insightful. I feel that, but what I mean by that is certain animation styles are overtly more realistic. Some of them, even though it's digital animation, has a much more kind of stop motion-y feel to it. I'm thinking about Kubo, which I think did have stop motion animation techniques. But I'm also thinking of something like Into the Spider-Verse, which, as far as I know, had no stop motion within it. But some of the camera movements and the frame rate of the animation and some of the design was intentionally sort of stop motion-y, almost giving it kind of a puppety 3D feel overlay, you know, within the foreground, with a background of traditional animation, digital and both hand-drawn. And so that's something that the visual reference points kind of pop out for something like Into the Spider-Verse. It just sort of pops out as you're looking at it, and it's kind of disorienting for the first 15 minutes. And you're watching, and you're like, my eyes don't really know what to make of this. I feel something sort of similar about this. It's not as aesthetically extreme as Into the Spider-Verse, but I would say, you know, the shading, the shadowing, it's sort of like realistic light over top of a comic booky character design, obviously with some Asian manga influence, and simultaneously in a kind of traditional Disney cartoon or Pixar adjacent cartoon feel. And so there's a wonderful detail of like hair, facial hair, eyebrows, obviously just hair. There's just some wonderful little details of just facial structure and the way that light cascades on a face or on silhouettes or shadowing. I mean, it's which is a lot harder than you would think. And so it gives this cartoon movie and where was it? It's not Neo Tokyo. It's San Francisco or something like that. This sort of kiddie movie has a kind of real world feel to it, which I think is important. Because the second thing that stands out to me about this movie is that it's some really kind of heavy shit for a kids movie. Now, Disney, of course, has been killing people's parents since Bambi and probably before that. But here's a film that kills a brother, and so which is essentially a surrogate parent to a hero, our main character. So you have Tadashi, who's the older brother, who is very smart and is going to this technical school and for advanced robotics and science and all this sort of stuff. And he's got a younger brother, Hiro, who's, I think, 13, 14 years old and is a genius. He's like a super genius. They lost their parents when Hiro was about 3. Tadashi and his aunt, their aunt, have been sort of raising Hiro since that time. And they live above their aunt's little cafe bake shop in this weird mix between San Francisco and Tokyo, San Francisco. And there's an evil industrialist, and then there's this benevolent fatherly figure scientist, Callahan, and then there is this group of misfit science nerds, you have the comic book obsessed Fred, played by TJ Miller, more on him in a second. You have Go-Go, this sort of tough, instead of saying man up, she says woman up, kind of tough. Girl power, that's bad to say, but that's kind of what she is. Kind of this, tough tomboy. She's like Joe from Facts of Life, which is a reference most of you are not going to get. But she's sort of like, I'm into things that boys are traditionally into. And she's played by Jamie Chung. I'm pretty sure was in The Real World at one time. You have Wasabi, who is very neurotic, rules-oriented, very organized, very almost compulsive character, played by Damon Wayans Jr., who was from New Girl, and amongst other things. You have Honey Lemon, who's this, I think she's in mostly in the chemistry. She's played by Genesis Rodriguez, more on her in a second. And then you have Robert Callahan, that loving, fatherly mentor type, played by James Cromwell, who I believe is deceased, the late, great James Cromwell. Wonderful voice, just a great voice. If he's not dead, my apologies to his family. You have Maya Rudolph as Aunt Cass from Saturday Night Live fame, who's pretty spectacular, but more on her character in a moment. And there's a few other people. Alan Tudyk plays Alistair Alistair Cray. And he's, of course, if Pat were here, he'd say famous from Firefly. And yes, amongst other things, that's right, Pat. What is this movie? All right, it's sort of this weird manga inspired but Americanized movie about dead parents and a brother who dies. There is a hero is as we meet him is somebody. He's a charming, roguish kid who is swindling bot fighters. In this world, there are robots, and he is using his genius to create these little microbots, these little kind of metallic little beads. They make up robots, and they fight. He's using them to sucker and hustle in these underground kind of like cockfighting or dogfighting rings or whatever. And obviously, those are some shady people in there. And once they figure out he's hustling them, they want to kill him. Tadashi is the more older, straight and narrow sort of brother, and he's always looking out for him. And so he takes his brother to his school and says, listen, you're a genius. You graduated high school at 13. You should be in college now. You should come work in this robotics lab with my nerd friends. And there's a science competition. If you can get into it and you can win, you get a scholarship. You get to come to the school. Well, of course, Hiro wins with his microbot technology. And on the night that they're all about to go out and celebrate, there's a fire at the school. And Tadashi runs in because somebody has to help. And he's killed. and Callahan is killed with him. So this fatherly mentor figure and one of the world's smartest robotic scientists and his brother and his future are all sort of killed in one fell swoop. Character falls into a depression when he discovers the creation of his brother Tadashi. He created a medical kind of nurse robot who's this sort of big Michelin man, sort of Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, big vinyl balloon guy robot, who is Baymax. And Baymax responds to pain. And so this character's in pain. He stubs his toe or something, and Baymax activates. And really, this is the last link he has with his brother, because his brother created and programmed this robot. And the robot kind of becomes a surrogate brother to him in many ways, because the robot is so naive and so innocent. Hiro has to become Tadashi for Baymax. And it's really about two different avenues of which we can deal with our loss. And from here on out, I've already spoiled parts of it, but I'm going to spoil the rest of it. So if you haven't seen the movie, I would recommend it. Go ahead and check it out. I'll give you my final review after these spoilers. Okay, here are the spoilers. Tadashi does die. Hiro has this little microbot bead, and the bead leads him to these other beads because they're sort of attracted to each other, and he thought all of his microbots were destroyed in the explosion. And he discovers that somebody, this villainous figure in a kabuki mask, is using the microbots and has produced millions of them and is up to no good, right? So he gathers his friends. Fred is this comic book obsessed, multi-millionaire kid, heir to a throne. There's a funny little gag about the portrait on the wall. The dad looks like Stan Lee. And so T.J. Miller plays this character. T.J. Miller is someone I can do without in life. Just in general, could probably do without him. Don't find him particularly charming or funny, and find him kind of annoying. And he's okay in this, only because kids films, you have to have, I don't know if you have to, they do have these broad, high energy characters. And so it's like, for the ADHD kids in the crowd, here's this guy. You know, there's always got to be some kind of wacky character just when you think, you know, we want to take it seriously. You know, Hiro's a funny character, but he's kind of a slower character. And, you know, Baymax is a very slow character. And there's a lot of dry humor and sight gags with him and fart noises, but not too many, you know. But it's like, it's more conceptual humor, for lack of a better term. So you need the wacky, goofy guy in the wacky, goofy costume making wacky, goofy faces and high energy. And, hey, kid, look at the screen, look at the screen, look at the screen, kids. That is the T.J. Miller's role. That is T.J. Miller's role, and that is Maya Rudolph's role. And thankfully, they're not in the movie too much. Maya Rudolph is a fantastic talent, underutilized here in this film. She basically just plays the aunt who's just in between when the characters are running back and forth and completely oblivious that there's a giant robot living upstairs. Don't know how. But hey, the woman is running a business, okay? You know, in San Francisco, that's not cheap. She's got a lot of muffins to make to pay for that building. Come on, she's raising two boys. Lady's got a lot going on. But really, yeah, it's about grief. And so Hiro figures out that, hey, whoever this person is, they are responsible for the explosion that killed my brother, and so I want to catch him. And that desire to catch him makes him transform Baymax from just this nursing robot, because the robot's programming is, I have to help you until you're okay. And once he realizes he's not just in physical pain, but he's actually suffering from depression and loss, which he at first defines as puberty, but then when he scans him again, he realizes, no, you're depressed. You've suffered a loss and you're hurting, and I can't rest until you're not hurting. Which is a very touching thought when you really think about it. So he convinces the robot, well, what will help me hurt is catching this bad guy. Well, the robot's meant to give hugs and lollipops, not be a superhero or fight crime. So he reprograms him with a bunch of Matrix-style martial arts and gives him a suit of armor based on samurai armor and gives him all these different powers, and eventually his desire for justice turns into a desire for revenge, and he ends up programming a destroy program, which is when we find him, we're not just going to catch him, we're going to kill him. And he gathers a group of the nerds from the school who are all friends with Tadashi to join him because they just want to support this kid because they've grown to love him as much as they love Tadashi. And they realize this kid's hurting and he needs love. He needs family. He needs to be hugged and held and told that he matters and it's okay. And so everybody in this kid's life is just trying to love him. Is just trying to, hug him. Just trying to tell him it's going to be okay. Like you're gonna be all right. And it's awful, you know. And he doesn't want that, right? He doesn't want human companionship and affection. He wants what all people want who have experienced a loss, which is he wants his brother back. And he knows he can't get his brother back. So that longing for his brother turns into, if I can't get him back, then I want to make the people who hurt him, who hurt me, suffer. And that is the decision that he makes. And he does this unbeknownst to his friends. He tells them that, hey, we're just going to catch this guy. And they all get different abilities. The chemist, Honey Lemon or whatever her name is, ends up becoming... she has all these different chemical concoctions and potions that do different things. Her abilities are vague at best. Basically, she just ends up getting a helmet and a purse with different buttons, and she pushes different buttons, and this little glowing ball comes out of a purse. And I realize she's supposed to be the frilly... She's supposed to be the counterpart to Go-Go, right? Go-Go is the rough-and-tumble tomboy, and this is supposed to be the kind of sweet-hearted, prissy, girly girl. But I don't know, man. I don't know. Call me a feminist or whatever, but should your superpowers be a purse? I don't know. I don't know about that. You know, can we have accomplished that in another way? I don't know. It seems like maybe somebody was wanting to sell some toys to some young girls. I don't know. You know, I guess there's two ways of looking at it. You could look at it as, well, okay, it's a purse and her power comes from her purse. I don't want to go too far with it. But another way you could look at it is you're taking a traditionally gendered object and you are empowering it. You're turning it into a weapon and a source of power via science, right? So we should be happy that there are two female scientists and they're the smartest people on the team and two of the most capable people on the team. And so that's the thing. You could look at it one way or the other. I don't know. Just give her something else that isn't a purse. I'd be cool with it. Otherwise, not a bad character. And then Wasabi has like laser blades, which I felt like they could have done more with that. Just as a comic book nerd, I'm like, you're probably gonna get killed. Or maybe just wear pants. You know, he's wearing like genie pants. I don't know. Maybe put a little armor on. You know, he's got these little blades. Maybe armor up a little bit. Maybe bulk up the defenses, you know. I don't know. Go-Go is developing this maglev suspension system for like a motorcycle, so there's zero resistance, so you can go faster. She takes the wheels off of it, puts it on her legs, and then has like these Tron-like discs that she throws as blades. That's okay. And Hero basically just has like a little suit with some contraptions, and he just rides around on the big robot. And Fred has a giant lizard costume that blows fire, and he can jump really far, and it's literally a giant goofy, like, school mascot lizard costume. This is one of my issues with the film. As a grown man watching a comic book origin story, like, their abilities kind of suck, and their costumes kind of suck. Like, you have all this great technology, and like, this is the, you just put wheels on your feet and you just roll around really fast? Like, that's the best you can do? I don't know. These kids seem smarter than that. At the same time, you're creating striking, simplistic visuals for kids to be able to understand. Here are simple powers and abilities that young kids can understand. So I accept it on that level. The twist of the film is that the villain in the Kabuki mask is actually Callahan, that he faked his own death because he wants revenge for something that happened to him, and I won't completely spoil it. And so he suffered a loss at some point in his life, and he's become obsessed with grief to the point that he's willing to kill children. And Hero is obsessed with his grief and has become obsessed with revenge to the point where he's willing to kill Callahan. And then a decision has to be made whether or not he's going to do it. And of course, it wouldn't be a Disney movie without there having to be some sacrifices along the way of some wonderful characters. The standout character in this film is Baymax, played by, I'm going to butcher his name for the second time, Scott Adsit. And if you've never heard that name, either have I. And it's one of the things I appreciate about this movie. There's about three or four actors, Jamie Chung, Marlon Wayans Jr., Alan Tudyk, James Cromwell, Maya Rudolph, so five. Other than that, well, T.J. Miller, I guess, is six. None of those people, what I say, are like superstars, right? They're not Chris Pratt. They're not even Elizabeth Banks, right? They're not these giant megastars. It's not Justin Timberlake as Hero, you know, whatever, Yatsumi or whatever his name is. It's some guy you never heard of, some people you never heard of, and some character actors who you recognize the voice, but it doesn't so overpower the character. Sometimes when you cast a celebrity in a role, you can't see or feel a character. You just see an experience. That celebrity doing it just sounds like Beyonce. It doesn't sound like, you know, whatever the character is supposed to be. So I appreciate that. I appreciate the design of the world. I appreciate the dealing with some serious stuff, which is really how do we deal with grief? And this movie says that we deal with grief, not, you know, we can be angry when we've experienced a loss, but we don't deal with our grief through wanting revenge. We don't deal with our loss through hiding our pain or masking our pain like Callahan does. And meanwhile, it's destroyed him, right? He's hidden his pain from the world to the point where it's destroyed him. And it's he's a character who has experienced so much loss, he literally wears a mask, right? And then, which is what Hero is on the way of doing, right? What Hero feels only empowered to deal with his pain by putting on a mask. It's only when Hero decides to do the opposite of Callahan, which is be honest and vulnerable about his loss and what his brother meant to him, and depend upon a support system of friends and family who love him, who've always been there the entire way. He just couldn't see them because he was blinded by his grief. He was trying to, and his depression, and he's just sort of trying to deal with it on his own. It's only when he opens himself up to friendship. It's only when he opens himself up to love. It's only when he opens himself up and lets the pain out, with a particularly touching scene with Baymax, a couple of them, that he's able to begin to move past. You never move past a loss in the sense of you never forget the person who you've lost. When you love somebody, and especially family, and you lose them, you never unlose them, right? The loss is never undone. You never, quote, move on. There is no such thing. I think moving on is a lie. The closest that you can get to is acceptance, that they are gone. And yet they'll always be a part of you. And it sounds so trite and it sounds so cliche. And this movie even deals with that because Hero is mad. Everybody's telling me he's not really gone because he's a part of you and all this sort of stuff. And people tell you that stuff all the time. Well, he's not really gone. Well, I can't talk to him. I can't talk to Tadashi. He's not here, right? I can't spend time with him. I can't take back all those times that I could have spent time with him and I didn't. I can't, you know, I can't undo the choices that have already been made. There is no second chance. Which is why, if you are alive in this world and you have unfinished business with somebody you love, don't waste the opportunity. Anyone that's ever experienced a significant loss to someone who's close to them will tell you that. You can't get the time back. You can't go back and say, I wish 5 years ago I would have done. You can't. And unfortunately, we only see the things, you don't know what you have until it's gone. That's the unfortunate thing about human beings. We take for granted the thing that is plentiful and at hand. Well, there's always tomorrow. Well, there isn't always tomorrow because our tomorrows aren't guaranteed. And it really isn't how we should treat one another. So if you love somebody, especially during a quarantine, for instance, you might be annoyed at them. You might want some social distancing from them. But remember that you love them because you don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. You don't know what could happen. I doubt a evil scientist who's plotting revenge against Alan Tudyk using microbots would set a fire to his advanced computer lab and kill your loved one. But hey, your world might be a little bit different than mine. Point is, take care of each other. Love each other. Get each other through the hard things in life. We need each other. We need compassion. what this kid didn't need. This kid didn't need violence. He didn't need anger. Anger is a natural process of grief, but he didn't need to give in to hate. He needed a hug. He needed a lollipop. He needed a friend. He needed a brother. And Baymax was able to give that to him. Movie, of course, wraps up nice and tight. And when I think about the film, I think about the obvious. There's an obvious decision at the end of the movie. They're like, hey, we're going to make 10 more of these movies. This is definitely a superhero origin sort of a thing. And what I would say is I think they made a TV show off of it, or maybe even a couple TV shows, but they never made another movie. And I don't know what else you could do, because the least interesting thing, the characters are good. The humor, it is funny. It is very cute. I wouldn't say it's child-friendly, but not necessarily childish. Has some scarier moments for young children. Deals with a lot of heavy stuff. Doesn't shy away from death or murder in the same way that, say, you know, Coco wouldn't as well. But I don't know where else you go with this story, because to me, it's not really a story about superheroes saving the day. That's the weakest part of the story. You know, if you want a superhero origin story, go watch, have your kid watch something in the MCU or Into the Spider-Verse. That's a great superhero origin film. That's not just what that movie's about either, though, but it does that part better. What this movie is mostly about to me is it's about the different ways in which you can process grief, one of which you can come to acceptance and wholeness, and the other of which you are destroyed by it. You can be destroyed by your pain. You can be destroyed by your losses. They can fundamentally change who you are and make you ugly. So do you want to be ugly, or do you want to be honest? That's what this movie's about. So if I had to give this movie a score out of 10, I would give Big Hero 6 an 8 out of 10. I think it's a solid B movie. It's very cute. It's very sweet. It's very sincere. And so because of that, it is a recommendation. If you are at home and in lockdown, you can find this on streaming right now on Disney Plus. I don't get any kickback for that. You know, my kickback is to stay in this bunker, isolated completely by myself indefinitely, talking about cartoons from 6 years ago. That is all the bonus I need. Speaking of bonus, if you want another bonus episode from us, binge movies from me, because God knows where Pat is. God knows what those microbots are doing to his poor, poor body. Ugh. If you want a bonus episode, if you are a binge lord or a listener, if you are a subscriber and you want to, you want me to review a movie for you, go ahead and let us know what that movie is at Pat and Jason or bingemovies@gmail.com. Here's the other thing that you can do. Feel free to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We still need reviews. And if you leave us a review during this lockdown, put a little note in there of like, hey, I would like you guys to cover this movie. And we'll do it. I'll do it. I'll do it. I'll do whatever. Come on. Let's go. You know, you tell me what to watch, I'll watch it. Doesn't matter what it is. You want me to watch a romantic comedy? I will watch it. You want me to watch a musical? I will watch it. You want me to watch a foreign language film? Ooh. As long as there's subtitles, I will watch it. If you want me to talk about a horror movie, I will watch it. If you want me to talk about a Western, I will wait till Pat comes back and Pat can talk about it. Any movie you want, go ahead and leave it in the Apple Podcast review. I'll talk about it. If you don't want to leave us a review, it's okay. Just tweet the show or email the show. We'll cover it then. And as for next week's episode, 5 more films you should watch next week. So until next time, binge on.